to go. Taco to
and a big queue.
Taco to go.
Taco to go. Trip Taco just $2.99. Comes with a big queue, this deal so fine. Brisket breakfast, so much to choose. For $2.99, you really can't lose.
Taco to go. Taco to
go. This deal legit.
Taco to go. Taco
only at Quick Trip.
Taco to go. Taco to go. Taco to go.
$2.99.
Final hour of this show. Don't forget the Gas House Gang happens at 12 o'clock. Cardinals manager Ollie Marmol will join the show. Bernie Miklas, Tom Ackerman, and me. That is coming up today, again, in just under an hour. We hope you'll stick around for that. It is time now to go to the guest line again. We are joined by the mayor of Lake St. Louis and candidate for St. Charles County Executive. Jason Law is with us on KMOX. Good morning, Jason. How are you?
I'm doing good, sir. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's good to have you. So what made you decide to run for St. Charles County Executive?
You know, I think St. Charles County is kind of the gold standard for our region's politics. And, you know, in the city of Lake St. Louis, we've cut taxes by 46%, becoming a debt-free city. We've cut bureaucracy, spurring $400 million in private investment. And we invested millions in the police department, cutting crime by nearly 45%, becoming a top 10 safest city in the state of Missouri. And I want to bring those best practices to St. Charles County.
Well, one of the things by the way, Jason, hi, this is Brad Young. One of the things that you've been campaigning on is this elimination of Missouri's vehicle emissions testing program. What are your thoughts? Why is this such an important plank to run on?
You know, that's one of the many things we're running on, but it's extremely important. It's an archaic EPA regulation from the early 80s, and there's 750,000 cars that have to go get this test, and it costs our economy over $115 million a year with a 2% failure rate. And after 2010 vehicles being made, it's a 1% failure rate, and half of those are gas caps not being properly fastened.
Well, you mentioned EPA a moment ago, Jason, and does EPA right now require emissions testing, particularly in areas of St. Louis that seem to be under a lot of times under EPA mandates because of the air quality issues?
Yes, they do. So there's four counties on our side of the state that require it. But with less than a 2% failure rate, it's really not doing what it was meant to do. So under this new Trump administration, who's getting rid of some of these types of regulations, right now we're trying to drive our Missouri legislature, which we're getting some traction. Mark Mathiesen, a state rep, really tried to get this done in the legislature. Bob Onder, congressman now, but prior had it passed, but it had to be vetoed by Governor Parsons just because the EPA threatened to eliminate some of our road money.
Right, but wouldn't that happen
now? Right,
yeah, would that happen now is my question. If the EPA regulations are still in place, wouldn't this law, if the law goes into effect that would eliminate emissions testing, wouldn't that run afoul of the current EPA restrictions on the state of Missouri and threaten or jeopardize a lot of tax dollars coming to Missouri?
I don't think so. I think with the new administration and our strong senators, I think that we're going to bring enough awareness that we're just wasting money where this money could go into our economy. I mean, it's not really doing anything to help our state right now. It's not helping air quality when there's a less than 1% failure rate. So what is the reason to still have this regulation and make our people go to these testing sites when they're far and few between and get this done? They have to take off work. They have to use their own money and, you know, all these different ways of financial burden on our taxpayers.
Well, many of the studies that have been conducted, energy studies in the last several decades, have pretty much suggested that these laws do work, that they have helped cut down on hydrocarbons and, you know, nitrogen oxides and all kinds of bad stuff. So whether or not it is a high failure rate, the laws have been working. So is it, you know, Do you have a whole lot of people who have come to you and said, this is the thing, we got to get rid of this. We have to get rid of this emissions testing. Is that what voters are telling you?
Yes, a lot of my voters and a lot of my constituents are like, why do we have to go do this when other counties don't have to do it? Does it work? And once we did the research, yes, when the law was put into place in 1984, it did. It brought down emissions. But since the catalytic converter's been in place in these vehicles, it just isn't needed. The law did what it was needed to do. Now it's time to repeal that law and find and just eliminate it.
We're talking to Jason Law. He's the mayor of Lake St. Louis and a candidate for St. Charles County Executive. And Jason, one of the other things that directly impacts St. Charles County is the growth, the population growth. So from your perspective, is that necessarily a bad thing? Is that a good thing? And if it's a good thing that St. Charles County continues to expand from a population standpoint, what do you think needs to be done to manage that growth properly?
You know, you need to make sure you are managing the growth. Responsible growth is extremely important in St. Charles. Do we need to grow? Yes, but we need to grow in responsible ways. And there's several ways to do that through planning and zoning and through other initiatives like a master plan. And we need to make sure we get the community involved on how they want to see St. Charles County grow in the future.
Talking with Jason Law, the mayor of Lake St. Louis right now, the election is not going to happen until 2026. We know that also in the field, Mike Elam, who is sometimes a host here at KMOX, is part of that field. Bill Eigel is also running for county executive. Why do you think you'd be a better candidate than those two guys, for example?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, you know, both the other candidates are great people. I get along with both of them. But I'm in a unique position where I have executive leadership. My other job is I'm a lieutenant colonel with the St. Louis County Police Department. And I manage the operations of 1,300 employees that directly affect the lives of 450,000 residents, along with indirectly helping other municipal police departments, which is another 550,000 residents. So I have that executive leadership experience. And with the mayor of Lake St. Louis, putting in those policies and practices of a proven track record of success is why I'm different than the other two candidates.
Jason, the current St. Charles County Executive, Steve Ellman, I've interviewed him many, many, many times over the years. And one of the things that he talks about is that St. Charles County, because of its growth, because of its size, because of its financial influence, should really be a part of and have a seat at the table, if you will, on a lot of these regional issues that are being discussed, whether it's with St. Louis County, St. Louis City, and other in other areas. Do you agree with that St. Charles County should have a seat at the table in these negotiations that affect regional issues, whether it be the airport or bringing businesses to the area? So should St. Charles County be a part of that?
Yes, our population is 415,000 right now, and County Executive Steve Ellman makes a great point in that. We should be at the table. Our colleges and our schools here in St. Charles County are very successful. Our population is working for the whole region. We have people that work in St. Louis County. They have people that work in St. Charles County. We should definitely have a seat at that table, and we should drive good policies for the entire region.
When we talk about seat at the table, can you define that? What sort of influence do you believe should be had there?
I mean, when you're talking about East-West Gateway, which they do have a seat at, but they're outvoted by St. Louis County and St. Louis City on several issues. We need to maybe restructure that in a way that we have more even power throughout the entire region, or more even voting power throughout the entire region, because we're greatly affected by the city's voting, and that really hurts our region overall.
Jason Law, the mayor of Lake St. Louis, candidate for St. Charles County Executive. Again, the election not till 2026. We appreciate your time. Thank you for visiting with us today.
Thank you very much.
Here's the problem that I have. Listen, I'm a conservative. I'm always in favor of deregulation any chance that we can. But to me, in this regulation that involves the regulation of vehicles, if we don't have the threat of failing in emissions testing, then there seems to be no incentive for many, many Missourians to keep their cars in working order, because that's costly. And without the threat of failing emissions testing, you're going to see a lot of cars on the road that shouldn't be on the road, and that's dangerous in of itself.
Yeah, that's I don't think the reason to get rid of a rule is because it has worked. That just doesn't seem to make sense to me.
Right.
Yeah, it's working. So because it's working, we don't need it anymore.
Right. But he said
that's not good rationale.
Exactly. Because he said only 2% of cars fail. Well, I think in large measure,
because they know they have to get emissions testing.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, oh my goodness, I'm going to have to make sure my brakes are working. I'm going to have to make sure my catalytic converter is working, because we're going to come up with this testing. And if you eliminate the testing, the quality of cars goes down. It becomes more dangerous on the highway. I don't want some car driving next to me on the highway on 40 that hasn't had their brakes tested in years. I don't want that. I don't think most people want that.
No, and I get it. There are things we have to do that are kind of annoying. You got to go out of your way to do it. Nobody wants to go get their emissions testing done. I don't want to have to do that in order to be able to get the new license plate sticker. I don't want to. It's another chore. Nobody wants to do that, but we can't just eliminate things just because it's a chore.
Right.
We have to do chores sometimes.
Right. We do.
That's life.
And it has to be a balancing act. You know, is the good greater than the detriment of having to do it? And in this instance, I think that equation says it is.
That's Brad Young filling in for Amy Mark's course today. 314-436-7900. Don't forget, we are still taking your donations to the website we have now, kmox.com/Red Cross, for tornado relief efforts. All the money that is donated to kmox.com/Red Cross will stay here in the St. Louis area to help those affected by the Missouri and Illinois destruction that happened with that tornado about a week and a half ago. It's the Chris and Amy Show on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Taco to go, taco to, and a big cue. Taco to go, taco to go.
We just
review. Quick Trip Taco, just $2.99. Comes with a big cue, this deal so fine. Brisket breakfast, so much to choose for $2.99. You really can't lose.
Taco to go, taco to,
this deal legit.
Taco to go.
Only at Quick Trip.
Taco to go, taco to go, taco to go,
$2.99.
Go. Let's go, go, go.
Brad Young had an interesting question that I had not even considered. I didn't know this was a thing in regard to the new Pope, Pope Leo XIV.
Right, who is a White Sox fan.
Who is a White Sox fan.
We know.
From the south side of Chicago. And first American-born Pope that we've ever had. And apparently might have to renounce his citizenship? Maybe.
Here's the issue. When you are the head of a foreign government, and that's essentially what he is, he's the head of the Catholic Church, but he's also the head of the country, the Holy See, the country of Vatican City. It's a nation. That's why we have ambassadors to the Holy See. So if you're the head of a foreign government, then under international law, you are immune from the laws of the United States if you come to the U.S. They don't apply to you as a foreign, as the head of a foreign government. So, for example, if King Charles, even though he's not the prime minister, but even as the king of England, if he comes to the U.S. driving a Rolls Royce and blows through every stoplight, he cannot be prosecuted for that. Because he has
diplomatic immunity.
Diplomatic immunity. Okay.
Diplomatic immunity.
Right.
I've seen the movie.
Oh, sure.
Lethal Weapon.
Of course.
4.
Yeah. You can learn a lot from those.
Yeah.
So especially how to pull apart a bomb in a bathtub. But that's a whole other story. But you have diplomatic immunity. So then the question becomes, can a U.S. citizen at any point in time be immune from U.S. law? And the answer to that is no. If you're a U.S. citizen, you are always subject to U.S. law. So it creates this conflict that no one's ever thought about before, which is now that he's the Pope, he's the head of the Vatican, then he's not subject to U.S. law. So if he ever comes here, it creates a conundrum.
So does it change the calculus that it is very unlikely that Pope Leo ever drives a car again?
Well, but it's not.
He's never going to be driven around.
I know. But
he's going to be driven. He won't do it himself.
That's true.
Yeah.
But it's not just traffic laws. It's any laws.
Yeah.
So if he goes into a Burger King and steals a Whopper.
I imagine that he's never going to a Burger King again.
He's probably not. Okay. We can all admit that. It would be funny to see, though, that a Pope goes into Burger King. It sounds like a great joke. But if you're not subject to U.S. law, that creates an issue. Now, at the end of the day, do I think this is going to be a problem? No, because I think that U.S. officials are going to say it's the Pope. Okay.
Right.
If he became the head of Russia, if a U.S. citizen becomes the head of Russia, that's a different thing. All right. But if you're the Pope, they're probably just going to wink and nod and say it doesn't matter. But it does create this issue that I don't think anyone contemplated that as a head of a foreign country, he's no longer subject to U.S. law.
Now, in order for this to be challenged, his citizenship to be challenged, who would have to initiate that challenge? Would it have to be the U.S. government? Would it have to be a private citizen who says, hey, wait a minute, how would this work?
Yeah, it would have to come from the U.S. government. Now, technically, a civil lawsuit could apply. So if someone was injured by his motorcade and they tried to sue the Pope, he could say, I'm immune to civil litigation because I'm the head of a foreign country. Chances of that happening, slim to none. So it would theoretically have to come from the U.S. government, which I don't see the U.S. government pushing the issue, because all of a sudden now you've alienated millions and millions of Catholics in this country if you try to go and revoke his citizenship.
See, I didn't even think about it from that perspective, that you have people who he is very important to them because
yes.
It's important to their religion, who may take exception with the U.S. government for pursuing that.
Right. See, that was the issue. I wasn't alive then. But when Kennedy was elected president, as I studied in my political science classes in college, the question was, will he have more allegiance to the Pope or to the Constitution? And that was the big issue. And we laugh at that issue now. We think, oh, that's a non-issue. But in this instance, I think it's a real issue. But because it's the Pope, no one's going to do anything about it.
Well, that was a question about his electability in the first place.
Yes.
That, oh, my, can we elect a Catholic? And it seems so ridiculous that we even consider that. It almost makes you wonder what sorts of things we worry about now that 30 years from now or 40 years from now we'll think is totally ridiculous that we even considered it.
Well, and let me put this in a context that comes closer to home. Pritzker in Illinois, Governor Pritzker is probably going to run for president. I think it's guaranteed he's going to run for president. Should someone with his girth and his size, will people not vote for him because he's a fat guy?
Well, we already have one in office now. What are you talking about?
I know, but I'm telling you,
75 million people voted for the fat guy this time.
It's going to be an issue. And there's also rumors that Trump is on Ozempic right now to lose weight, and he has lost some weight. But the point is that there's always a factor where someone's going to say, I'm not going to vote for them. And we snicker and laugh now at the Catholic issue, but we're going to have to deal with the weight issue when Pritzker runs.
I would love for somebody to just go after the Pope's citizenship. Just say, you know what? We can't. Stand for this.
That guy'd be out of office in like a minute.
We can't have this man be a citizen of this country.
That will not happen at all because of the political ramifications.
You think ICE would come after him?
Well, ICE couldn't come after him because he is a U.S. citizen.
Well, what if he wasn't?
But if he wasn't, no, he's had diplomatic immunity.
No, he's got diplomatic immunity.
Yeah. Well, so no, ICE is not going after the Pope. Don't worry.
That's good.
It's not going to happen.
That's good. That's good. We're going after everybody else. That's Brad Young. I'm Chris Ranji. We still do have, and you should know this, that Ali Marmol is going to be joining KMOX at 12 o'clock. We have the Gas House Gang coming up at 12 o'clock. And Ali is with us every Tuesday, and he spends a considerable amount of time with us. So if you have questions for the manager, Ali Marmol, go ahead and text them in. 314-436-7900. We will try to get to as many as we can. when we talked to the manager. The Cardinals overall have been playing some pretty good baseball. They have won 16 of their last 21 ball games. They continue a series in Baltimore later on this afternoon, 4:40 pregame show, and then a 5:35 first pitch against the Orioles. Brad Young in for Amy. I'm Chris Ranji on KMOX.
Taco just $2.99. Comes with a big queue, this deal's so fine. Brisket breakfast, so much to choose. For $2.99, you really can't lose. Taco, 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 taco. This deal legit. Taco, taco, taco. Only at Quick Trip. Taco to go, taco to go, taco to go. $2.99.
Text messages 314-436-7900. Feel free to join the show. We love when you do. This is a texter from earlier.
Yeah.
A question about, we were talking about kids and them not being able to use social media under the age of 18. In Texas, they are trying to pass that law. So it will be banned for anybody under 18. And we were also talking about the constitutional rights that an adult has versus what a child has. And they're not, the child doesn't have full rights like an adult would. And this question is, I'm curious how Brad views the restrictions adults face at work in comparison to kids at school.
Mm. Yes, I understand that. Employment law is actually what I do for a living. And this comes up a lot in employment law situations where people will be on their computers and they'll be doing things that they shouldn't be doing, like checking Facebook or Twitter, shopping on Amazon. No, I'm not even going there. We all know what there means, but just doing innocuous things. But the idea there is that the employers own the equipment. So during COVID, there was this push to work from home. But employers, from the employer's perspective, they were thinking, hey, if you're going to be working from home, how do I know you're actually working and not just shopping Amazon all day long? And so employers started putting keystroke monitors software on computers. And there were lawsuits about that. Lawsuits were resolved 100% in favor of the employer because the employer provides the equipment. The employer can control what you do with the equipment that they provide you.
Yeah.
So if you got your own phone and you're cruising Amazon all day, you couldn't be fired for cruising Amazon, but you could be fired for neglecting your actual work duties that the employer is paying you to do. They're not paying you to surf Amazon. They're paying you to do a work or a service, and they could fire you for just not doing your job.
Yeah, I mean, your constitutional rights aren't infinite at work, right? I mean, there are certain, because it's a private company.
Correct.
There are certain requirements they can expect of you.
Because keep in mind, the Constitution only applies to government action. And I think that's the big answer to that question, Chris, is that the Constitution places limitations on what the government can do, but the Constitution doesn't place limitations on what private employers can do. So, for example, you come to work and you're wearing a Trump T-shirt, you come to work and you're wearing an AOC T-shirt, and you get fired. And you can't say, hey, I've got a First Amendment right to say this. Yes, you do. But not at work, because the work is not the government.
Right.
Unless you work for the government. And that creates some problems sometimes whenever the government in its position as an employer fires people, then they're still bound by constitutional restrictions because it's still the government.
There is a fundamental misunderstanding on the part of a lot of people when it comes to the First Amendment.
Yes.
Who they believe, many people believe that you can say whatever you want, whenever you want,
right,
without any repercussions at all. That's not what it means. What it means is the government can't throw you in jail.
Correct.
That's what it means.
Correct. And so that came up a lot during the George Floyd riots and the riots that ensued afterwards on college campuses after October 7th. And I remember I was hosting right here on Camo X one time and was talking about how the protesters should be arrested because they were encamping on college campuses. And I had a lot of callers who called in saying, wait a minute, they're exercising their First Amendment rights. Well, right, you do have the First Amendment right to speak, but you don't have the First Amendment right to take over and occupy a college campus, which is essentially private property, and also prevent Jewish students from going to their classes. You don't have a right to do that at all. So there's also a difference between speech and actions.
So Amy and I on the show, and I know we're not the only talk show to do this. I think a lot of shows are tackling this issue because it is such a big part of our lives now and will continue to be, and that is artificial intelligence. And it will grow more and more invasive, either good yes. or bad. And one perspective that I had not considered or even thought of is that law firms, and this is something that is you know, personal to you because you are a partner at a law firm, that now law firms are having to, I suppose, are using ChatGPT to help them with citations in court filings.
Correct. Writing briefs is really the big part.
Well, apparently some of these have been submitted and the citations they have used are not real.
What happens?
Is that what's going on?
Yes. And in fact, I have my own case right now where the opposing party is not represented. Her attorneys fired her, so she's now a pro se litigant. And she has filed briefs in my case where I'm representing a company that she is suing. And her briefs had fictitious citations. So here's what happens. What happens is that if you go to ChatGPT or if you go to Gemini or any of these AI websites, what happens is you say, write a brief that says X, Y, and Z, and it'll do it. But the case law that it creates, because any brief that's filed with a court, you have to say previous courts have ruled similarly as to what I'm arguing, and therefore, court, you should do the same as these previous courts. But AI doesn't understand the difference between a real case and a hallucinated case. And so it will just fabricate case law. In the case of Smith versus Jones, the court held blah, 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 blah. Well, Smith versus Jones could be totally fabricated. So unless the attorney goes through and reviews all of those case citations, then they're going to file. They have. Big law firms across the country have had this happen. The attorneys get fired, obviously, from their law firms for doing that, because not only is it wrong, because you're perpetrating a fraud on the court. You're saying to the court, you should rule in this way because the prior court has ruled this way. That's fraud if it's an AI.
It's punishable, right?
It's punishable by termination of your employment. It's yeah. also punishable. Technically, it would be a bar violation. You could lose your license right. to practice law for doing that. You couldn't really go to jail. But yeah, there are ramifications for that.
That's fascinating. It's fascinating how, and I used the word pervasive a moment ago, the way it's become and how we're all using it for just about everything and how often you get AI results just by using Google.
Yes.
For example.
Every time you Google.
Yeah. And I wish I could think of this example now, but there was one where you asked a question to it and it said, hey, is this okay to do this? It says, yes, of course it's okay to do this. And that gives you the answer. But you ask it a slightly different way and it'll say, no, it's not okay to do that. Like, you can manipulate the results and you're not. So when I Google something and the AI response is the very first thing you see, I always take that with a grain of salt because I'm not sure right. it's understanding exactly what it's reading when it presents it back to me.
Well, in a way, though, Chris, you just described the flaw in every poll you've ever seen, because polls you can change the outcome of a poll by changing one word here
sure.
and one word there to skew the poll to get different results.
There's a very good example of that when it comes to immigration, where if you say, you ask the question, should they crack down on illegal immigrants? It has overwhelming support, like 2/3 of the public says, yes, we should be cracking down on illegal immigration. But if you say, should they take somebody who's been here for 10 years working a job, paying taxes and doing all, should they be deported? The answer is, well, no, they shouldn't be because they've been contributing. It all matters how you ask the question.
Exactly. But when you get back to this AI hallucination thing, there was a court case here in Missouri from last year called Cruz versus Carlin, I believe is the name of the case. And they're another, when I say a pro se litigant, that's a person that's representing themselves who's not an attorney. They filed a ChatGPT brief with the Court of Appeals in Missouri. And a Court of Appeals, you don't read Court of Appeals decisions and find a lot of excitement in there. But they were ticked in this, and they didn't make any bones about it. They went off on this pro se litigant, said you're committing fraud by filing these cases. You're attempting to lie to the court by saying this is precedent and it's really not. And they dismissed her entire appeal.
Let me ask you this question. You see in movies when a person says, I'm going to represent myself. Yep. And sometimes you see it in real life, too. And it's a dramatic case or something. And you think, OK, this guy really should not represent himself because clearly there's something wrong with him. But he doesn't trust attorneys.
Right.
How often does it happen where a person says, I'm representing myself and is not a lawyer, and it goes well for them?
I've never seen it. And I've not even once. I've had a lot of pro se cases in my career where I'm representing a company that's getting sued, and the person is representing themselves. It never goes well. And here's the reason why. I can give it great example for this. It goes just about as well as if you don't speak Greek and you go to Greece and try to get by on English. Okay. Or even better, if you go to France and don't speak French, you're going to be barbecued because you don't speak the language. And pro se litigants don't speak the legal language. And I've never once personally seen that go well.
I wonder if it almost, I think maybe a better example might be, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's going to Greece, not speaking the language, but pretending like you're speaking the language because it sounds the way you're saying it. You're speaking Greek words the way you think they sound.
Right.
So it would be just a bit gibberish. It's just gibberish.
Right. And that's why pro se litigants are. I think that's even a better example, Chris, because people watch enough TV, they think they know things.
Exactly.
And it's never right.
Filibuster.
Never right. No. Never, ever. It doesn't work well.
I'm sure
somewhere it has worked. I'm not negating that possibility. But just in my experience, never, not once.
Does the judge ever, because it is a person's right to represent themselves if they want to, does it automatically start the case off on a bad note because the person has decided not to use representation? Has just said, I'm doing it myself. Is the judge already thinking, okay, this guy.
Right. But I will tell you this, because judges are human, all right, and they want to give this person a little more latitude than they would give an attorney because they don't know what they're doing. And they always are making mistakes. And the judges will give them a little bit of latitude. But at some point, even the judges say, okay, you've crossed that line. No more latitude for you.
Here's another legal question. Just because I'm thinking of all the legal stuff now that's popping into my head.
I'm going to send you a bill, but go ahead.
Oh, I'm not going to pay you. And I did not give you a dollar. Okay. So you're not on retainer. When a person, now I forgot my question.
Oh,
I had a
no.
great question. I have been sidetracked, and now I forgot what the question is. And
wow.
I'm telling you, it was a good question.
I know it was easy to sidetrack you, but I didn't know it was that easy.
Oh, my gosh. I think I'm losing it.
Wow.
If I think of what it is, I'll come back with it.
Okay, or text me, either one.
But I'm not paying you.
Well, I didn't agree to that.
I would just like to make it clear that I'm not going to pay you.
Okay.
Attorney Brad Young is with us. I'm Chris Ranji. It is the Chris and Amy Show. You can text 314-436-7900. The Guest House Gang is coming up at 12 o'clock with Ollie Marmel on KMOX. Just a bit to go here with Brad Young, our legal expert, who effectively sidetracked me last segment, and I have forgotten a question, and now I'm
very proud of that, by the way.
I am concerned that maybe I have a mental issue.
Well, I'm going to make sure and talk to Amy about how and strategies on how to sidetrack you when you guys are talking about stuff.
She sidetracks herself.
Okay.
She would end up getting her own self confused in trying to confuse me, I think.
You're probably right.
Right. Oh, the iPhones, man.
Yes.
They're going to be so much more expensive. We talked to Dave Simons about it, that they could go from something like $1,100 or $1,200 to $3,500.
Look, let's just be honest about it. Not taking the spin, taking the hyperbole out of the conversation. iPhones will never be made in the United States, period. Just like toys for children, never going to be made in the U.S. again. Strollers, never going to be made here. Because to make them here, it would cost so much, like the iPhone, that you're essentially driving the product out of business. There was a study done last year about toasters. There are no toasters made in the U.S. If you made a toaster in the U.S., when you looked at the time involved and the amount of money, because we have things here like minimum wage that they don't have in China or India or other countries, a toaster would cost $150 minimum for the cheapest brand of toaster.
Yeah.
Okay. Unless you're Taylor Swift, you're not buying $150 or $200 toasters. You're just not doing it. So it's never going to happen. So what's going to happen is I could see iPhones shifting from China to, say, India, Malaysia, South Korea, other countries, but it's never going to be made.
Well,
the
he's already told Tim Cook to not make them in India.
Well, it's
so
not.
I don't look. It just I agree with the idea that we have sent too many jobs overseas.
Correct.
Generally speaking, over the decades, I agree with that idea. I also agree that we have automated way too many of these jobs, which is a probably a bigger reason why a lot of the manufacturing work has evaporated in this country. But we, on the other end, the consumers, it's kind of our fault because we want to buy stuff for cheap.
Sure.
So we're not going to accept a $3,000 smartphone when it can be bought for $1,100. We can complain about, oh, there aren't enough jobs here. Oh, but I'm also not going to pay $3,000 for an iPhone. I'm just not doing it.
See, that's why I'm a no tariff guy. I don't think any tariffs are good. But if you're going to do tariffs for the purpose of increasing manufacturing in the U.S., you do targeted tariffs on products that we already make here, like cars, okay? Ovens, big ticket items that can be made here, and you just expand the width and breadth of the production facilities by instituting tariffs. But you're never going to bring strollers back to the U.S. They're never going to be made here.
Or newer industries where we think we could be at the we could be the leader, the worldwide leader in that.
Okay, I go with that too.
So that's different. But some of this, you know, genies out of the bottle stuff, we're just never going to do it. And I would say my suggestion would be stop buying iPhones and now you can get a Samsung Galaxy.
Says the guy who loves Samsung Galaxy
phones. I love the Android, and I was going to say that earlier, but apparently the cost of Samsung Galaxies will also potentially go up by about 40%.
Right, but less, so, because I think they're made in South Korea. And so they wouldn't go up as much.
Jake is watching on YouTube and says Android users constantly talking about iPhones and how they are better than them. iPhone users, on the other hand, never even think about Androids or people who use them. Oh, really? Really?
No, I agree. I never talk about Android phones.
Oh, you iPhone green bubble, green bubble. Why do you have a Samsung? Are you poor? Shut up. Your iPhone people are constantly talking about Androids and how much they hate them and that they wish that they didn't have the stupid green bubble.
No,
nobody complains more than iPhone people.
A Samsung Galaxy person talking about iPhones is like a man talking about feminine products. They got no business carrying on that conversation.
Yes, I can. I've used an iPhone before when somebody else, you know, let me use your phone real quick. They're awful. But I do love a MacBook. It's different. For whatever reason, I really like MacBooks.
Okay.
I do not like iPhones.
I don't really understand that.
But. Also, let me get this out there, too. You people who like to...
People.
Colin Jost made that joke about Samsung users being poor. How much do you think an Android costs? You think they're $50?
$60?
No.
$1,100. No. No, this phone is like $1,100.
Well, I know, but you've got big radio money, so you can afford that one.
I need that big law money is what I need.
That's why I have an iPhone.
This is like, that's very good. Also, you know your iPhones use Samsung parts? Yeah.
Okay, well, that's called cherry picking. You take the good parts and you leave off the junk. I think it's a good idea.
This texter says Samsung phones do suck. Get yourself a Google Pixel. I can't speak to Google Pixel. I don't know if it's good or not.
No idea.
I'm interested.
And here is a shock. A friend of mine's got a Motorola phone. I'm like, Motorola? What is it, like from the 50s? I mean, I didn't know they were making cell phones still.
I loved the Razr. And you know what else I really liked? I loved BlackBerries.
Oh, you CrackBerry?
Yeah, I loved the BlackBerry, and I loved... There was a BlackBerry flip phone that I had that I loved.
I remember that.
Oh, that thing was fire. We should go back to flips.
They were good.
They were... Brad Young, thanks for hanging out with me today.
My pleasure.
Appreciate the legal advice. If I think of that question, I'll send it to you.
Text me.
You got it. That's Brad Young in for Amy Markscores. John Hancock is back tomorrow with me. Hope that you'll join us at 9 o'clock for the Chris and Amy show featuring John Hancock. We'll have a good time tomorrow, I hope, unless John yells at me for something. He's always yelling at me. But we'll talk to John Hancock tomorrow. Anything you missed is on the Odyssey app. Go back and listen to it. Download it to your phone. We hope that you do. Coming up next, though, it is the Gas House Gang. Manager Ollie Marmel joins the show. It's Bernie Miklas, Tom Ackerman, and me next. The Gas House Gang on KMOX.
Trip Taco, just $2.99. Comes with a big cube, this deal's so fine. Brisket breakfast, so much to choose. For $2.99, you really can't lose. Taco, 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 Taco. This deal's legit. Taco, Taco, Taco. Only at Quick Trip. Taco to go, Taco to go, Taco to go. $2.99. Taco to go.